Hey, all you holistic hipsters out there, it's that time. So grab your chalice of choice and sit back and sip along with us. We would love to welcome you to the Tea Podcast, where we spill the tea on all things holistic in the pet grooming industry. Let me introduce you to our hostesses with the mostesses.
She is a socialite of skin and coat care, Ms. Michelle Knowles.
And the queen bee of all things oily, Ms. Melissa Conti-Diener. Brought to you by TheOilyGroomer.com. Are you searching for a new and more mindful way of grooming? Interested in understanding how to grow your grooming business with a more holistic and organic approach? Please contact Melissa Conti-Diener at TheOilyGroomer.com so that you can set up a meeting and bring balance and prosperity to your life. And AllThingsPaw.com. Intermediate and advanced courses in pet esthetician work, fear recovery, animal handling, and more. Get your learn on with All Things Paw. Also, classes with Melissa, online and self-guided, intuitive energy work, transitional therapy, and compassionate touchpoint therapy, and more. And the Herbal Paw Pet Apothecary. Tailored for the individual pet, phone consultations, history gathering, and the home of the Herbal First Aid Kit.
Now, let's get the tea party started.
Yay! We're doing it again!
Don't clap all the way around. This is it. This is the...
Or...
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So how are you today, Miss Michelle?
I think I'm going to be okay for a minute.
Oh, good. Only a minute.
I think I might not die.
Oh, that's always good. Please.
I mean, not intentionally. I mean, eventually I will, but I mean, not today. Not today.
I'm proclaiming not today.
So. Okay, fair, fair, fair.
And you know, when the queen makes a proclamation, it means absolutely nothing. But
yeah, I thought we had to follow it or off with our head.
Yeah. So we're discussing this off camera. I'm just too damn nice. I can't off with our head. So.
You want to be mean, but you just can't.
I just can't. It's too hard.
And I don't mean to be mean, but I probably am. We're perfect for each other.
I know. You are the yin to my yang.
Probably. Uh-oh, you're all frozen. One moment, please. All right. Technical difficulties. So here we are.
Me being the technical difficulty. So. So what's in your, what's our topic and what's in your cup?
Well, we truly record these two times in one day. So still on my stuff. It's an orange and cinnamon tea, orange peel and cinnamon tea with some liquid minerals.
Oh, nice. Ice, no less.
Yeah.
And I have my favorite new mug, which will probably be on many shows from here on out.
It looks so cute, especially since I know it's dimpled.
It's super cute, little all Marie's different personalities from the Aristocats. And I have a lovely strawberry rose tea in here.
Nice. All right. Our topic today is Notes from the Grimoire. For those of you who don't know or don't want to type it in, it's like a spell book. And yes, as you well know, that Melissa and I would be classified as kitchen witches.
Yes.
So I really wanted to talk about how oils and herbs are used in therapy or just in regular grooming. What's the difference
between an herbal therapy and an essential oil therapy, because there are some differences.
Yeah.
So I think I get the question asked the most is, well, why don't you use essential oils instead of your herbals? Or why do you use herbals, you know, or why do you use not use or use one? And I don't usually use essential oils simply because I can make my own herbals and I control the dosage. But that's just what I prefer. I don't think essential oils are bad. I think that you need to understand how they're made and how they work and how to dose them out. Herbals are the same way. You have to learn how to dose them out. You just can't be giving somebody a cup full of whatever, whatever. Right. Because that could be way too much. Even on the skin, it could be detrimental to the skin if you're just slopping it on there or whatever.
Well, I think first off, everyone needs to be crystal clear on the fact that herbs, botanicals, whatever you want to call them, the whole flower, the whole plant remedies, all those things, as well as essential oils, any type of aromatherapeutic oils, they are medicinal.
Yeah.
And so when you're working with medicinals, you need to have a healthy respect and a healthy amount of knowledge of what you are A, trying to achieve with them, and B, understanding that every living thing is going to react differently to them. So as an example, I put lavender in my, a few drops of lavender in my shampoo for my anxious dogs.
More technical difficulties.
Ah, I see it. Can you still hear me? Oh, I'm back.
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why it's being weird today, but, so you have to make sure that you're doing things like spot testing, give the animal time to react. If there is a reaction, or I should say a negative reaction to whatever therapeutic modality that you are using, whether it be herbal, botanical, floral, essences, essential oils, hydrosols, it just depends. But it has to be a well thought out plan prior to just popping open a bottle and shaking some stuff into shampoo and applying. Mm-hmm. So there's my disclaimer. Carry on, Michelle.
And it's the same on this side of the garden bed for sure. When you're doing concentrated botanicals, like I use a lot of tinctures and oils that are tinctured and extracted with oil, there is a definite dosage that you have to use when using those. Or you're going to either waste them, or they're too powerful and they're going to lead to things like diarrhea or scaly patches or whatever. So learning the dosage is important. And I tell anyone who is thinking of getting into the herbal or the essential oil game that you have to at least take a class so that you understand what you're working with, how it's made, how concentrated it is, and what the regular dosage would be for humans, for internal, external, even though I don't do anything internal. All of my concoctions are for topical use only.
Right.
And if I tell you that otherwise, then it's just between me and you and the stars. And I'm not going to charge you, or I'm just going to give you some advice with a huge disclaimer. Internal, that is between you, your doctor, and God, and I am not going to interfere with any of that. That is your personal decision. However, external, I'm very comfortable with using herbals externally. I believe in the less is more kind of thing. And I think that you feel that way about essential oils
too. Absolutely, yeah.
However, the concentration of each of those is very different. mine is much less concentrated than an essential oil, which is literally, you know, 5 million flowers in 1 little ounce bottle, basically. So that is much more volatile. And that's actually what it's called, VOC. Mm-hmm. It's much volatile. What is it?
Brain fart at this
point. Yeah. Something volatile, something that that's how it flashes off or whatever. But yeah, I think it's important to take a class, take a course. I am coming out soon with an herbology therapy course that layers onto the master course. You can take it separately, but it does blend very well when you're making regimens, when you want to work with herbals and things like that.
Volatile organic compounds. Thank you. Yeah. I could not think of it.
Like you can only, like I'm soaking right now various things in alcohol. And you can only soak some of them. You can only soak for 6 to 8 weeks. If you go beyond that, it becomes a volatile organic compound.
Right.
Then I'm getting close to an essential oil type of concentration.
Right.
Although still not nearly that concentration, but you're getting up there in the danger zone, if you will. So I have to monitor the times that they're soaking. But tinctures, the reason that I make those is because they last for years and years, like 2 decades or more. I can store away those lovely healing compounds inside the alcohol for a very long time. If I would just keep the plain herb on the shelf, they dry out, they lose potency. It's a way of capturing and storing them to use later, a lot of it for later. So I don't have to worry about losing potency in the herb itself. The oils don't last that long. Now, they still last up to a 5-year period, depending on what
you're doing. Yes, but exactly.
But they don't last nearly as long as the alcohol tinctures do.
No. Mm-mm. No. And it also has shelf life depends greatly on how you are storing them. Mm-hmm. You know, want things
Heat and light are always detrimental to the storage of your herbs or your oils. So you're going to want to keep it in a cool.
And any water is going to introduce bacteria.
Right, right. So that's why you'll find a lot of my formulas, even my regimens, are separated into different pieces. And then I give you instructions on how to mix them. If I were to mix them beforehand and send it to you, that's shelf life that you're losing because I've mixed them together.
Right.
So we don't want to do that. I want to keep everything as fresh as possible. And then mixable as possible. So that's why the instructions are the way they are. I'll show you how to make the regimen itself and then what you add and at what times. And I think that is the healthiest way to do it if you are working with topicals, working with pets, working with clients who maybe are not familiar with the, how to groom, how to bathe, or the therapeutic process. So I think that basically is why they're packaged the way they are. I want everything to be fresh and separated from one another until it's time to add them together so they can make the good thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with your oils. You know, the more that you say you have a roll-on bottle, a lot of people buy those for ease of use to roll onto a spot and utilize. Well, the more you expose that roller to any type of skin, or even if you're rolling it on a cotton swab or, you know, something like that, you're introducing bacteria into that. So you should clean off your roller with some alcohol, just some regular rubbing alcohol on a cotton swab. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that, that we don't really think about. The more you have the lid off of your essential oil, I get nose blind because I work with them and I use them. So I don't realize how potent they really smell. And so the other day I had wintergreen open in the classroom. One of my students actually had a sore shoulder and I said, well, we can put a little wintergreen, you know, and rub it on your shoulder real quick. And I had the bottle open when I went over, you know, I gave her a drop or two on her hand and then I put the bottle down and I got called to do something else. And the people out on the floor were like, why do I smell gum? They kept saying, thinking it was like chewing gum, like spearmint or something, but they knew it was a mint. And I, to me, it wasn't as strong, but so allowing that to permeate into the air is also going to, is also going to dissipate that oil, you know, because now light, now heat, you know, the elements are actually getting to it. So you want to make sure that you recap right away after you're finished using it, and don't, you know, let them leave them open. You'll also see that over time they will get sticky or gunky. You know, they'll the viscosity breaks down, and you'll know that they're not, they're losing efficacy or potency. So and I think that's the same thing, even though if it's a tincture and it's in alcohol, that's what preserves it. When you're using,
if you want longevity of oils, you want to add some vitamin E. That will keep it from being rancid.
Right.
It can still oxidize.
Yeah.
It can still get gummy because it's drying out, basically. But a little bit of vitamin E in your oils will always help keep it from being rancid, so that it will, the longest it is on the shelf, you can still use it all those, all that period of time.
Right. Yeah. And oils will go rancid. That's something that you have to understand, that it's not, it doesn't stay good forever. It doesn't matter how much you purchased it for.
Right.
You know, they're, the elements are eventually going to break it down. It's something that I think we get so used, and I've said this before, we get so used to that instant gratification. I always say we're an instant gratification nation. Mm-hmm. We want it. We want it to work right now. We want it to be everything, to just be 100% in that moment. And so let me use this oil that I've had for 10 years at the back of a closet, or, you know what I mean? Or I've been keeping it on my desk or whatever. And then you're like, oh, it still smells. It still has the smell of whatever it is. But that scent is only one piece of all the components that make up that oil. So understand that you need to rotate stock, that if you have a lot of oils and you have them for a long time. I just did a big clean out because I have a big, oil chest that I keep all my oils in. And after a while, there are some that I just didn't use that much. And oh my gosh.
Melissa has bags and bags and shelves and bags and some shelves, and then a grocery bag, and then a chest, and then a box.
I have them all over. I mean, I have them in my hutch, in my kitchen, because everywhere. I'll cook with them. You know, I have them in my medicine cabinet, in my bathroom. My daughter had reached in to get a piece of bread out of the toaster oven when she was here, and she reached in and she didn't realize it was that hot, and she actually touched the little metal grate inside and had burned her finger. And I was at work and she texted me and she's like, I burned my fingers. Do you have anything? And by the time I texted her back, she already texted, before I even got the chance to text her back, she had already texted me back. Never mind. I went in your bathroom and I grabbed the roller of lavender, because I have oils all over. And so she knew, just rub that on there and it'll help with the sting. So it's like, I have to rotate through that stuff, because as you know, I'm not using certain things, it gets old and it loses its efficacy. It just is not going to work the way I want it to. It's not going to give me the results. And as much as it pains me as a hoarder extraordinaire to throw anything away, I have to toss those things. And in a home or even at work, I make sure that I put them inside of like a Ziploc or something, because of animals. I don't want my animals to get to that.
Right.
And think it's something to eat.
They lick and do all kinds of stuff. And yeah. So how would you go about using essential oils just as a basic therapeutic, let's say for allergies or whatever?
Well, if I have an allergy dog, a dog that is prone to sensitivities, I of course, lavender is always the easiest to obtain. Mm-hmm. It's also, I call it the Swiss Army knife of, of essential oils. So it can be used for a multitude of things, but it's also the gentlest.
Mm-hmm. And how do you dilute that down?
I usually will, because oil and water don't mix. So if I'm using, if I have an allergy prone dog in the tub, then I might add two drops of lavender to my, 24 ounces, the mixing bottles, two drops of lavender to that. Now, obviously there's water in there as well with my shampoo. So I will shake it up really well. Sometimes I'll use the little frother to mix that in, and then work that through. And it's usually very benign. You know what I mean? With producing a reaction or an adverse reaction to probably.
And it plays well with the majority of skins.
Right. Exactly.
And things.
Right. Chamomile is another one that I keep close to the tub area or keep in my bag that I always have with me. I always tell people if you come up to me and say, oh, my elbow is hurts, or I have, you know, I'm all stuffy and I don't open up my bag and pull oils out because I always have them with me, know that I've been kidnapped and I'm under duress and I don't have those with me. So it's gotten so much so that at work people just literally come into the classroom and they're like, hey, this is what's wrong, what do you have, you know? So chamomile is another one. Roman chamomile works really well. It's another very benign, gentle, that you can add a few drops to your shampoo. That calendula is another that I find will be easily absorbed without any, heightened risk. But again, small amounts. By the drop, for sure.
Not by the half teaspoon.
Yes. I've watched videos where I see groomers like, I use essential oils, and then they pop the aerator off of there, and they're literally glug, 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 pouring things in. That's how you have accidents. You know, that's how you have chemical burns, because it is literally a volatile oil. So it doesn't necessarily just have to be citrus, which we can cause burns very easily.
Cedarwood oil.
Yep. Any of those. So, you have to have a working knowledge before you just jump in and start to do things. And I like to mix the two. I enjoy doing things like taking chamomile and then using an infused oil and adding that chamomile to, say, plantain oil, which is also very soothing. And it's something that will, it's a starch. So it will draw out as well. Or add plantain oil and add a little eucalyptus to that, which can be like an expectorant. You know, we want to pull out something. So, but you have to have that kind of knowledge instead of just being like, well, on the bottle, it says this. Because it's frightening. Sometimes I see things on the internet and I'm just like, no, I'm going to look like that emoji. Like, no.
The Home Alone emoji.
Oh no. What are you doing? Or I see people just pouring it into like, oh, this gets rid of bacteria. And I put it in the dog water dish with the dog's water.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And it's like,
or putting it neat, which means full strength onto a dog's nose. Yes. That dries. Oh my gosh. That's so dangerous.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. Yeah. Especially because they can't process in their liver. Yes. Some of those cats definitely have the least capacity to process things in their liver of that nature. So,
and I have people that ask me all the time, why don't you come out with your own line of oils? Why don't you come out with a book on oils for felines? why don't you, because I don't want that responsibility. I don't want that liability. And so when you work in therapeutics like that and you're using volatile plant-based product, mm-hmm. you have to understand that that's just as potent as you working with pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. At that point, essential oils would be considered a pharmaceutical. Absolutely. Yeah. They're so concentrated.
Absolutely.
What's the difference between taking half a pill and a whole pill mm-hmm. or a whole bottle of pills? Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And you have to know things. You have to know that animal's weight. You have mm-hmm. to know some history. You mm-hmm. have to know, you know, all these things. So
yeah, not only is it a dosage per square centimeter of skin, but it's also absorption rate and right. different species absorbs differently.
Yes. And processes that absorption of that oil very differently.
Yes. So I always recommend take a class mm-hmm. before you buy your first oil and understand the ramifications of how you're using what you're using. And I would do that for even any shampoo that I have.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is that, you know your products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still recommend Barbara Bird's Beyond Suds yes. and Scents, and she has a 2.0, and I believe you can get it from Groomers Mall.
Oh, okay.
That's who she sells them through, but you can still contact her directly through Facebook or through her website. She is the queen empress of ingredient information. She really did the research. She's got the cred. My work would not be possible without the work of Barbara Bird. She is a huge contribution to this industry. And she will help you, teach you, or send you the book so that you can absolutely understand how formulas are put together, what's in them, what each ingredient does. You know, all these things are really important when you're working with products, even if they're right. already formulated, or if you want to go out on a limb and work with herbals or oils or things of that nature, you know, you need to know what you're doing, not only so that you can utilize it the best you can for the efficacy of it, but so that you don't harm. Yeah. You don't harm anyone, because you can with those. If you're not careful and you don't know what you're doing, if you have not researched it very well, there are so many places where you can get this knowledge now that there is no excuse for just using something neat on the nose. You know, I wouldn't use a tincture neat on anybody's nose. Even the oils that I recommend are diluted into a carrier oil.
Right.
They're not just, you know, extracts of pure whatever. I use a lot of comfrey. I use a lot of marshmallow, topically, simply because comfrey heals very fast, and marshmallow makes all the tissues just feel okay.
Right.
Literally, it just soothes everything. There's a mucilage that comes out of it.
That's what you're saying. Literally, just soothes
the tissue. Just pats it down, takes away inflammation. So those are a couple that I use quite often.
I think that it is. I think it's important that if you are interested in those things, that you educate yourself in those things and understand that if you're looking at recipes, if you're finding recipes online and you're trying to transfer this to an animal, mm-hmm. Dependent upon that animal, whether it's a dog or a cat or a bird or a horse or whatever, you need to know that with essential oils, there are general dilution rates or ratios of how much you need to use per carrier agent. Mm-hmm. So whether you're using a carrier oil, you are using a carrier agent that is not an oil base, like mm-hmm. a witch hazel or an alcohol mm-hmm. or water is never a good carrier mm-hmm. agent. Because the oil only sits on top of it. You can mm-hmm. mix them together for a moment, but it will eventually separate apart mm-hmm. and it will never be properly diluted down. You know, mm-hmm. like you add water to something and it makes it not as strong. It dilutes it. Well, it doesn't.
You certainly can probably put something in water, but you'd have to shake it and put it in a fine mist sprayer so that the bubbles and the oils are distributed for like what? You know, 30 seconds.
Right.
But that's and then you're getting a distribution, but it's not going to emulsify unless you put something that emulsifies in it.
Right. You have to have some kind of binder in there, you know? So when we're doing this, it has to be a process. It can't just be a shake some of this, shake some of that, pour some of this and not be, ultra conservative in the way that you are performing this.
Yeah, you can't be loose with it. Even when you tincture or extract an oil, there's an actual pharmaceutical formula that you use, a ratio of herb to extract that you have to use to so that you know what your dosage is. Otherwise, you might just get stuff out of the ditch, squish it up and put it on something. You know, and that can be dangerous as well. You don't know what pesticides have been sprayed in that area. You know, it's a thing. Yeah. It's an actual, you know, knowledge base that you have to get a hold of before you start using herbs or oils in that capacity.
And I when I first started to learn, I made it a point I started with human things. And myself being a super sensitive skin person, I have hyper allergy sensitivities to a lot of things. So, and then my child, if you don't know my background story with it, my middle child was born with, she was allergic to everything, including me. I couldn't even breastfeed her. So I kind of made it a mission to find things that were less abrasive than commercially produced products. And one of the things I did was go to the library. You guys are so lucky nowadays, you can just go online and find things. But one of my favorites was a magazine that I still get, and it's called Willow and Sage. And it comes out seasonally, and it has tons of different recipes in there, or grimoire, if you want to, you know, use the term again. It literally is a book of like a hardbound magazine. This is an older one, but it's a big thick magazine, and it literally gives you the breakdown of all the what oils, what botanicals you're going to be using, how to prepare everything. And they always give you the little disclaimers, like look for these things as adverse reactions. Yeah. And so you always want to have those. So that way, that's how I began, was I would make these human products. And then I started to learn more and morph those products, like a lip balm, and be able to use that and create something that could go on as a paw balm or a nose balm, or to make, you know, some sort of a lotion or cream that was used for, say, bug bites, or, you know, and then go from there and learn about the insect repellent oils and how to utilize those. And instead of putting them directly on the dog's skin, put them on a collar or a bandana, you know, so that you're still working topically, but topically does not necessarily mean that you have to be pushing that into the skin.
Right.
It can be on the skin, but on a different medium. So when I worked in Texas, fleas were very prevalent. And so I would talk to customers about making up, you know, getting a fine mist sprayer and mixing up some witch hazel and rosemary and some of the mints and lavender spraying dog beds and spraying. So that where the dog laid, it would still get the effect of that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to apply it directly to the skin as well.
It's a lot of things that you can absolutely, what do you call it? Diffuse.
Yeah, diffuse. Well, your diffuser does that with the water and the oil. It breaks it down into microscopic molecules where it is putting it into the air, and it's basically an even amount of water and oil. And they are sitting on top of the oil, sits on top of the water droplet, and that goes into the air.
And I think people don't realize also, you can make a tea out of an herb and diffuse it instead of using a volatile oil.
Right.
Especially if you have birds on the premises or cats.
Rats, rabbits.
They can tolerate a diffused tea that's made with steamed water and the tea, the herb itself, a lot better than using the essential oil, which could be caustic to the respiratory system, depending on how much you use. So many people don't realize, and I see people put like a bunch of drops of lemon oil in their drink, like, oh yeah, this is so good for me. I'm like, each drop's like 30 lemons.
Yes. I see people doing peppermint also.
You would never sit down and eat 30 lemons.
No, and do you know what that's doing to your esophagus and then down into your stomach? Mm-hmm. And you're literally like pouring acid down your throat that much.
Yeah.
There's no reason.
Yeah. So a lot of people don't understand. They think, oh, well, I'm able to buy it. Well, you're able to buy paint thinner too, but you don't remove your makeup with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Use your critical thinking and your logic, they're not to be trifled with. Now, I will say that I found, and I'm sure, Melissa, you've come across this as well. When you get it from the grocery store or from Whole Foods or whatever, that is cut with a bunch of other oils. It's not a true essential oil, even though they can claim that it is, it isn't. There's only, I think, about three different places that I would get essential oil from. And think that, okay, this is unadulterated. This is squish it or extracted, and that's what's in this bottle. And that's what I know that I'm getting. But if you're getting it just from a cheap place or Walmart or whatever, be assured that that's probably not pure and it's probably very cheap. They're not cheap to make and they're not cheap to buy. So if you're just getting, helichrysum oil for $5, there's probably no helichrysum oil in it at all.
No.
Because
look at your label.
Per 15 mil of helichrysum is like $85.
Rose is another one.
Rose.
No, Rose.
So expensive.
Yeah, Rose.
It's like $125 per 15 mil or whatever.
Look at your bottle. A lot of times it'll, on the back of the bottle or somewhere on the label, will say, warning, do not apply to skin. Do not ingest. Do not inhale. Do not, and it's like, okay, well, what am I buying this for?
Exactly. Number one, what are you buying it for? And number two, if you are buying it to use it, it has to be cut or it has to be carried in an oil, and a minuscule amount in like a cup of oil, it's what you're looking for. Not 15 drops of it in a teaspoon of oil.
And I do. I taught a class for Mary Quendo's positive education before. And I give a recipe for, dog treats that I've made that have mint or peppermint or spearmint. And somebody had written me and they're like, well, it's like, so many drops of peppermint to make so many cookies. And they're like, well, it doesn't smell super strong. It doesn't, like, I feel like it baked away, or I feel like, and I said, it's there.
That's a good point that you're bringing up. People don't understand when you're using herbs medicinally, topical, internal, or whatnot, or whatever. A lot of times you can't even smell them.
Right.
Even when they're coming out. The tinctures, they have a light smell. Some of the oils only have a light smell, but they're concentrated.
They're
in there. It's packed full of goodness. Some things are stinky, and which is why some major manufacturers, if they do use those oils or ingredients, they have to mask them with a fragrance.
Right.
They don't even smell good. Some of the medicinal tinctures don't taste good.
Right.
But it's what they are. The compounds that they carry, I think, are pretty interesting. That's how they're made.
Right. And it's not always going to be. I think we're just so inundated with the whole idea of air freshener.
Right.
And
then so our olfactory system is probably so damaged from deodorant, perfume, the smells of food, everything.
Laundry stuff. Things that we brush in our carpets and our you know, furniture with, and
sprays in the air, you know, and the ever popular diffusers that people add way too much to just for a smell. And when you're adding essential oils for a scent only, that's some concentrated stuff to be using just for a scent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you have to be really careful. They only hold what? Maybe a fourth of a cup of water, ones, just a small amount of water. And people are just dumping half a, you know, five whole mils of essential oil in there. And I think that is just, it's overpowering, you know.
And if it's overpowering to us as human beings, it is beyond, it is like a scent bomb to that poor animal that is just.
I can imagine that they're, the inside of their noses are just raw with the smell, you know.
Yeah. And I have seen firsthand, when I do consulting and I might go to someone's salon and they'll have me come in and they want to talk about product and all that kind of stuff. And I will, they'll tell me, oh yeah, we diffuse. And they have several diffusers in one salon and they're running different diffuser, you know, different fragrant and not fragrance, but different essential oils for the fragrance at the same time in just different rooms. And I'll see the groomers, you know, working, and I'll look, and just like when we stick out our tongue and we have taste buds all over our tongue, that is what is inside their nose and on the outside of their nose. Those are scent receptors, just like we have taste receptors all over our tongue. And I will look at those poor dogs and their noses are just, all those little buds are just all raised on their nose.
Not only that, you can also tell because sometimes they swell up on the outside of their nose pad and it looks like they have a rub sore. But what it is all that blood has come to the surface to try and deal with the chemicals that are being laid directly onto the skin. And they're everything. It just is fully blooded. The nervous system and the blood, the capillary action of their smeller is just engorged.
And you'll see them, they'll do the, you know, they like shake their snort and try to shake their head. And
some will even try to paw at their face. Yeah. Like I just do with my glasses.
Yeah.
Threw them across the room. They'll paw at their face because it's too much. It's too much. And you as a person are just, you know, oblivious. You just are ignorant of it. You can't even smell it the way they smell it. So you think, oh, it's nothing. They'll be fine. They're not fine.
One good test of it is at when, and I don't use a lot at where I work. Contrary to popular opinion, I do not own the salon where I work, where I teach. It is owned by another, person who was a former groomer, but, we don't use a lot of that because we have so many levels, different levels of groomers there. And so many do not understand or even care to work with essential oils. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I say I keep my things with me for my personal use. But one of the things that really gets me is on occasion, we get towels in from a service and the bags themselves with all the wet, dirty towels sit until they come to pick them up. And I will make a blend because it stinks like wet towels, wet dogs. And we keep them in a back room. And so I will make a spray and I will mist in that room and mist that just to help kill that moldy smell, that wet towel, wet dog smell, whatever. And I'll mist in there and mist the bags, whatever. The next morning when I come in, I can smell it so strong in the front, way in the front of the salon. And people will always say, oh, you know, Melissa was here because it you know, it smells like that. Whereas once I do it for a few minutes, I still smell it. And I might go back there, walk by that room and you get a little whiff of it, whatever. But then it just, we again, you know, our nose or our, limbic system,
just our olfactory system.
Olfactory system.
It's just not as developed as theirs.
No. And ours shuts it down. Our brain goes, okay, enough of that. We've smelled that enough. We're done smelling it. It doesn't mean that it's not working. It doesn't mean that it's not still there. Mm-hmm. It's just how our body response is to it.
And the same thing happens when you apply just perfume to yourself. Yes. And then half a day later, you think, oh, I've got to reapply because I can't smell it. It's there.
It's there.
That's why so many people stink up the place with their perfume, because they don't realize other people can smell it because they haven't been standing next to you for half a day.
Right.
You know, it's so still there.
Right. So be aware that there is lingering effect of those things being in the air, even. Mm-hmm. So if you're diffusing or you're making a spray that you're just spraying into the air, or if you're spraying on a fabric or something that you're trying to work that way, that angle, and not just putting it on topically, it is effective for usually up to 48 hours of being in that air and being in the environment. Mm-hmm. And for hypersensitive people, even longer, they can usually pick up on that. So a dog is already hypersensitive.
Well, the interesting thing too, that some of us fail to understand, is that not only can they smell it really, really good, they're also absorbing it through their skin.
Yes.
We've got a membrane on near our basal layer where cells are born. That's kind of like a barrier. So, I mean, if I put alcohol on top of my skin, most of it's going to evaporate before it even gets down to that membrane. Well, dogs and cats don't have that membrane. That soaks all the way into their skin. Cats really, really quickly, dogs less quickly, but it still happens. So not only are they getting it into their lungs, which is then going into their bloodstream, and into all their fluids, but then they're double dosing. If you're diffusing, it's actually laying on top of them, and anything that is has it laying on top of it, it's absorbing.
Yes. And what the body does with that absorption is it stores it in the lipid layers, the fatty layers. So it's actually going to do something with it. It's going to take it and it's going to say, oh, this is a fat. It's an oil. You've introduced this. Now I'm going to store it away until I know what I'm supposed to do with it.
And in cats, if they store it in their body, it's poison.
Yes.
Because they can't tolerate it. They're made different. They literally are made differently. You just can't just slather anything on a cat and they're going to be okay. You can make them very sick.
Yes. And, dependent upon the breed of dog.
And as birds, forget about it.
Yeah, and rabbits are very close to cats in their, their makeup, it's their delicate, physiology, right? So you have to be very, very cautious about what you're using and how you use it. So I suggest that you start with yourself. If you are interested in those things, start to create your own bath salts, your own body scrubs, your own shampoos, your own those things, and start to work from that angle and learn, take some classes. And
if you're just going to research, what does this oil do or what does this herb do? Research it so that you get information from several different sources, not just one. That way you can compile the information and see what has common ground between these people that are saying, well, it does this, it does that. But I do recommend somebody who could at least I don't think that there's a certification for knowledge of that at this point.
Not right now.
Something different, and you'd have to be the extractor to have the chemistry in the lab to test it each time that you used it. And we don't have that. We don't have that knowledge, nor can we afford any equipment we may need before we put 2 drops of oil or herbals on our dogs or cats or whatever. So get your information, just at least the terminology and the definitions, from several different sources. That way you can compile that information for yourself, because literally once you absorb that, it does become an art. Blending the oils or blending the herbals together becomes an art, and you use a lot of intuition at this point when you're mixing. As soon as you get to a certain level, it's everything starts to coalesce and it clicks. And you're like, okay, I understand. So it's this beautiful dance between all these chemical constituents that are going to meld together and get the result that you're looking for. So it's not just a matter of, okay, this says it's for lungs, pour. This says it's for inflammation, pour. This says it boosts the other stuff, pour. It's so much more than that. So I do recommend, I cannot stress the education enough when you're starting to delve into this area. Now, I believe that it is medicine. That's where actual pharmaceuticals came from is herbs. And of course, then essential oils that are from those herbs. And they can work wonderful healing power on your skin, on your internal body. I do believe that very much so. However, in practice, because of liability issues and the very nature of what we do, you know, I do limit my scope of information that I give away to topical.
Right.
I will rarely say, okay, you should take this internally. And usually I know you very well at that point, and you have some wits about you and you're not going to take the whole bottle.
Right.
But for general purposes when working with clients.
And it's still not 100%. But I think that it is, it's something that you really truly have to have a passion for.
You have to have an affinity for it.
Yeah. An affinity. That's a good word, is that you really want to understand it, because just like with a medication used incorrectly can harm. It's the same. It's the same.
And I do feel like herbals and oils are safer than pharmaceutical medications that have a bunch of other stuff in them for whatever reason.
Right.
Fillers and this and that and the other, just to make the pill. They need a binder. You know, there's a lot of different steps that go into pinpointing one chemical that they want to give you, and then concentrating that chemical in a capsule or whatever form they're taking. But I do feel like herbals have been here since we have and much before. And I think that they are put there to help balance and give us homeostasis in our bodies and our minds, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that it's important to make sure that when you are working with them, that you feel confident in the research and the education that you have been doing. Because if you don't feel like you know what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it.
Right.
You know? So I really feel strongly that way. And there are tons of books out there. Like there's on my bookshelf's in my other room, but there's a book called Spoiled Pets, and it literally breaks down how to use oils with pets. I've talked about Dr. Melissa Shelton. She's a veterinarian. She has desk references. She also has, if you don't feel confident in making your own blends, or you want blends that are usable with pets for specific things, go to, it's called Animal EO. Mm-hmm. And that is her brand. Mm-hmm. And these are all tried and true at her vet clinic. She is a practicing veterinarian and educator in essential oils. So that company is wonderful. And I often purchase blends from them that I know exactly what I want, just like you would go to Michelle's Apothecary to get something specific for whatever it is you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So I have two cats. One of them was not doing well. We didn't know exactly what was going on, but he refused to use the litter box. Long story short, I was using specific blends of Dr. Shelton's for that one specific problem, and it worked. And he started to go back and use the litter box again. And so it's important to find companies and suppliers that you feel confident in what they're providing you with. For me, a veterinarian who is in the daily practice of usage of those things gives me the, you know, it comes with, you know, their own disclaimers, and they tell you how to properly use everything. So that makes it a lot easier than just a specific oil company being like, hey, buy this because it does this.
Yeah. One of my mentors, my main mentor in my delve in herbology, is Dr. Patrick Jones. He was a veterinarian for 30 years and used herbs in his practice for those 30 years. He's since retired from being a vet, but he also took some extra schooling, and now he's a naturopath and also treats humans as well as their pets. And some of his before and afters will blow you away, like unbelievable things that, you know, in theory, I thought, yeah, that's probably possible. Well, he's got the before and afters. He's done it. He's done the thing.
Right.
So, yeah, try to find a mentor or some education where you trust the person. They have proof is in the pudding.
Right.
They have those before and afters, and they say, yes, I can guide you through this. Or if they're worth their salt, if they don't know how, they're like, you know, let's consult on that. And let me get back to you. And let me research that a little bit myself before I give you, you know, point you in the right direction. So, yeah, education when you're going above and beyond that is great. You could probably even do damage by using commercial preparations over the counter that are meant for therapeutics if you use them incorrectly. You know, something as simple as not rinsing well enough after a shampoo can send a skin into a tailspin. Or doing that and also not using conditioner and replacing oils and minerals that are necessary for skin health. That too can absolutely affect the health and the homeostasis, the balance of the skin and the other systems that it's attached to. So definitely find a good mentor that you like, you know, what they're laying down. Veterinarians are amazing, especially if they're naturopathic or open to other modalities. They're more than likely to have information that can benefit you in your journey to use herbs or and or oils.
Yeah, look for integrative vets or holistic vets.
Naturopaths.
Naturopathic, yes. So, I mean, those things. This is a, this, for me, it's a lifetime. For Michelle, I've known Michelle for almost a lifetime at this point. And it's been a lifetime of learning for you as well. So you don't get to, you know, gold status by, you know, just picking up a bottle and being like, okay, well, I'm just going to toss some of this into this. It takes a lot of trial and error, and it takes a lot of, well, this worked on this pet. Why is it not working on this pet?
Exactly.
And it's the same thing.
And there are reasons why. Right. And it's good to know the how and why before you delve off. And I think that's why a lot of people aren't successful with therapies either. You know, they're thinking, well, they told me to use this and this, and I've been doing it, and I don't see a difference.
Right.
There are underlying factors and nuances to every therapy. Therapy itself, the regimen making, is simple. However, the nuances are where the money's at, basically. It's where the healing's at. You have to understand the condition. You have to understand the processes that the dog is going through. It affects it by breed, by age, by the strength of the immune system. So all of those things, take into consideration how that preparation is going to work on that particular dog with that particular condition. So that's where it gets tricky. That's where the education comes in play. Not just, I mean, anybody could just follow a recipe. Anybody can do that. But to get true lasting results and an understanding of why that works that way, and maybe I shouldn't have done this, or I should have done that first for only the 2 weeks and then use something else after, that's where your education comes into play. That way you're not dependent on somebody always telling you, well, what shampoo should I use? What shampoo should I use? What herb should I use? What oil should I use? You know, that's important. That's why the education is important, and not just having a book of recipes.
Yeah, it's a great way to start, and then to just kind of dip your toe in the pool when you're making your own lotion or you're making your own those things. But then eventually we're looking beyond that, and we have to create for that specific problem or that what I, you know, will tell my students, well, what's the dog presenting? You know, and they'll ask, you know, well, this is what's going on. This is, well, this is what I would do, but you know, I, and on top of the fact that I prefer to work with a veterinarian. If I'm doing some kind of therapeutic that is already on a dog that has maybe on a medical regime already, you know, a regimen that they already have something going and they're using, you know, pharmacology for that, then I'm definitely going to reach out to that veterinarian and say,
diagnostics make it easy. Like if you already know what you're working with, that then it's all downhill from there. But those diagnostics and that partnership with a veterinarian are golden. And if you have that, you are so lucky. If you don't have that, seek it out. Seek it out. You will find somebody who's willing to work with you eventually. It's getting better and better. It used to be terrible, but now it's better than ever. A lot of young people are graduating from veterinary school and they are open to those other modalities. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, we're looking at a lot of big changes within the two industries itself.
So I guess
there's no music.
Have we rambled on enough?
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, and you're more than welcome to send us suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely.
More than welcome to ask questions. We are more than willing to answer whatever questions. We'll do a Facebook Live if we gather enough questions, and then we'll just go through the list to answer everything. So, yeah, it was great to have you here, and I hope to see you in the future. Melissa, until next time.
Yep.
May your next sip be just as delicious as your last. Delicious.
Bye.